Capital Radio Productions presents A. von Kiss, our new dramatised book reading, written and read by Alice Dale. Our story takes place in 1940.
Craigie, give us a song, shouted a voice from the bar in the mess.
Not in your Nelly. Give me peace to enjoy my drink.
Okay, fellas, fill him up. He needs a couple more before we'll get any entertainment.
What do you call this? Complained the airman at the piano.
You'll do till else is ready.
And other Scots pilots who were in on the joke laughed.
Craig Stebbings was a strikingly handsome 19-year-old fighter pilot of 92 Squadron. Already a flight lieutenant, his skills as a pilot ensured he would eventually become a squadron leader. Fortunately, his happy-go-lucky nature ensured popularity rather than jealousy. And like other popular people, he had a nickname. Most pilots called him Craigie, but Scots pilots called him Ailsa, after the tiny Scottish island of Ailsa Craig. The feminine-sounding name for such a masculine young man was part of the payback for being such a serious competition for the best-looking wuffs. Their other payback was to make him sing for his supper by filling him with enough booze to overcome his shyness and make him sing some of Scotland's best-loved songs. Bonnie Mary of Argyle, My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose, and many others. But ironically, the night before his plane was shot down, he chose to sing A Fond Kiss and Then We Sever, little knowing how prophetic that would be. As soon as his Spitfire reached the English Channel, he found himself in the middle of a dogfight with Messerschmitts everywhere. His initial fear on sighting the enemy always subsided when he made his first hit. This time, his fatal mistake was watching his hit spiralling down. And in that split second of inattention, he felt the explosion behind him. When he turned and saw flames leaping behind the cockpit, his inner voice said, "Bail out now." Craig had never worn gloves, said they interfered with the sensitivity of touch on the stick. Today he paid the price. He ripped off his straps and climbed onto the seat, twisted round and used his foot to hit the joystick, which threw the plane upside down. Gripping the red-hot hood with his bare hands, he pulled himself through and immediately smelled burning flesh. He knew it was his own. No time to think about that. He let himself fall from the burning inferno, seconds before his plane exploded. Then automatically, he pulled the ripcord. Fortunately, his goggles had saved his eyes. What happened next was a complete blur as he slipped into unconsciousness. Craig came to with a sensation of rising and falling, up and down, and he thought, "I'm dead and floating towards heaven. I can hear God speaking to me." "You all right, mate? Nearly went for a bloody Burton, you did." God was a cockney.
What's your name, mate? God wouldn't have to ask that. Then he heard a strange voice saying, he could say no more. But, and this always puzzled him later, he suddenly reeled off his rank and serial number. As the merchant ship made its way to Dover, he kept losing and regaining consciousness, gradually becoming aware of agonizing pains in his hands, upper chest, and lower face. Philippa Stebbings picked up the mail from the hall carpet and called to her husband, having breakfast in the kitchen. A letter's arrived from Dover. That's where Craig's in hospital. Oh, I hope it's good news. She re-entered the kitchen and sat in silence reading it while Stan continued eating. What a cheek! She suddenly exploded.
What's a cheek?
They're asking if Craig has always suffered speech defects. How dare they! If they had heard him playing Oberon in the school production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Yes, we know that, but they don't. Or heard his beautiful tenor voice, with every word as clear as a bell. This has nothing to do with his singing, and there's no point in going over what we already know. Well, they'll soon know, too. She grabbed her cup and downed the last of her now cold tea. That's right. You reply telling them these things during one of your free periods. Do you have any today? Yes, two. But I'm not writing a letter.
A telegram would be costly for all you want to say.
Stan, I have no intention of writing a letter or sending a telegram. I'm going down there to sort this out. And, of course, I'll see Craig at the same time. He won't have any speech defects when he talks to me.
What will your headmaster say about you going off so soon after the summer holidays?
I won't ask Mr. Duffy. I'll go to Mr. Mackey.
The second head?
Yes, he's much more understanding. Stan gripped her arm.
Philippa, stop right there. That's a ridiculous idea. Going all the way to Dover on your own? In wartime? With all the trains so unreliable? You must be mad. And think of the cost. If you ever got there, you'd have to stay overnight. Where? You've no addresses.
His anger fanned her determination.
I don't care. I'm going anyway. I'll find a B&B or something.
You're going where? Asked a familiar voice from the doorway. Oh, Irene, how nice to see you.
Just thought I'd pop in on my way to work.
How's John?
He's fine. Working late again tonight, so I thought I'd pay a wee visit this evening, if you're in.
We're never out. You're always welcome. You know that.
So, where are you going?
Philippa held out the offending letter.
Did he have any speech defects before the war, indeed?
Is that where you're going? To Dover? Why not just reply and say, no, he didn't? Add some details, if you like, to prove he had excellent speech.
That's what I said, Stan agreed.
And that letter could end up in a wastepaper basket. They must be run off their feet in that hospital, coping with all the wounded from Dunkirk. They won't consider a healthy boy with a temporary speech problem as an urgent case.
Mum, what difference would you actually make by going there? Irene asked kindly.
I'd explain the answer they're wanting. Developed a speech defect as vague as those official notifications. First that he was missing, then that he was in the casualty hospital with severe burns.
Now this one.
What kind of speech defect do they mean?
Craig has never contacted us, has he? That suggests there's something more serious we don't know about. Well, I intend to find out what that is. If that's what you want, Mum, then you must go.
And who's going to look after me while she's away?
We'll manage, Dad. I need more experience in cooking. Some of my efforts since I got married have been pretty poor. So, you could be my guinea pig, she said with a broad grin. But her father was not amused.
I see. So you, Philippa, swan off to Dover, leaving me with our inexperienced daughter to cook rotten meals for me.
How about learning a bit of cooking for yourself, Stan? The furthest you've ever got is making a piece of toast. You've never even boiled an egg. And when I was in hospital having our children, you dumped yourself on your sister and her husband, and Margaret was only too happy to have me. Well, I think we've discussed this long enough. Philippa picked up her briefcase and left the kitchen. Irene followed her behind and whispered, "Don't worry, Mum. I'll take care of him. You just find out if you can get time off from school." "Thank you, darling." She turned and smiled and planted a little kiss on her daughter's cheek before making her exit. Irene returned to the kitchen. "Well, I'm off, Dad," she said cheerily and left, with sounds of a disgruntled man in her ears.